Welcome back to the Pot of Greed.
Welcome back indeed, guys. It's the week after Thanksgiving, which means that we have a lot of news to catch
actually,
up on.
I'm starving.
I am too, actually. I should have eaten before this. We'll make it through.
We'll figure it out.
You know, there are a lot of people who actually wonder if like we record these like straight. And the answer is yes.
What do you mean we record them straight? What is
that? Like no breaks.
Oh, I mean, I think I've taken a bathroom break before.
Like rarely. Like most of the time when we record these, we do like the full like 2 hour or whatever.
Whatever it takes.
But yeah, hopefully you guys had a good holiday. You maybe were able to spend it with friends or family if you celebrate. And if not, that's okay too.
Or maybe you went to the club. I mean, that was just your Thanksgiving like dinner. Okay. For some, look, I'm not going to lie. You saw those clubs were open.
Yeah. Also,
nasty.
We have a lot of news to catch up on as well from the past, I guess, 2 weeks or so now.
But before we get to those stories, put your ones. Oh, wait, are we still doing the premieres? I forget.
You were not this month. So this month, right. We are not.
Don't put your ones up.
Yeah.
There are
this
premieres.
Month, we're trying to see how this goes without doing them, but we will probably return
to them. Miss it.
However, we do appreciate you guys' support as always. I did want to make a small little PSA, by the way, about this. I saw somebody left a comment the other day, and they were apologizing because they had to cancel their membership because money was getting tight this month. And they left a comment saying, like, you know, I'm sorry, guys. I'll, like, re-subscribe whenever. Please don't feel like you're obligated to...
Money's tight for everybody. If I'm not saying like everybody's run out and cancel your subscriptions immediately, your memberships immediately, but I mean, if you got to, you got to.
Yeah, like you're not, you know, don't worry about it. Like if you want to resubscribe or whatever, remember. What is it? YouTube is such a weird.
Yeah, I don't like the phrase remember. Let's not
rejoin,
say that.
Rejoin, I don't know. You can, and, you know, we'd love that, but don't. It's the holidays. Like, look after yourself first, right?
Facts.
Okay, so there is Yu-Gi-Oh! News to go over from the last couple of weeks. I think the first big thing that's worth talking about is actually sort of a delay on Phantom Revenge.
More delays, golly.
So you guys might remember that Legendary Collection 5Ds got delayed from like November 5th or something to like the 20th, something like that. Basically, same thing here. Phantom Revenge was supposed to come out this week, December 5th for official OTS stores. Today, I guess, for OTS stores, like the 5th for this week, and it is now being pushed back to the 19th. So, 2 week delay.
A 2 week delay, which I wouldn't have any problem with that if we weren't so close to the release. I'd rather them announce 2 week delays a month early.
Yeah, it's interesting because it kind of makes me think that there's got to be something going on with their factory now. Like, I don't know if it's like a tariffs thing or just like a general like cost of production, whatever.
I mean, it could be more of a distribution thing.
Yeah, distribution thing. If someone has more insight into that, I would love to hear about it. But
if
this
you work
is,
for Konami, please write us.
Yeah. They write us a cease and desist. But I'd like to know more about that. Like, this is two delays in a row that are exactly the same length of time, which is to say 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of makes you wonder, like, what's going on? So.
I mean, I'm not
going
to be too mad at a delay on Phantom Revenge. I just didn't like the archetypes in there.
And speaking of the archetypes in there, we did get content creator early box openings. So we've gotten a little bit of an indication of the rarities
now
of some of the cards.
Early.
Yeah, now they're quite early, aren't they? Yeah. Hecka Hands and especially Kuel Toons. Kuel Toons, I think, got the most amount of foil cards. And then Eniacraft got the least. So, like,
I'm not
by
surprised.
Foils, we're talking. Ultras and stuff like that. So, I know you already kind of mentioned that you're not really building any of these. None of them stand out to me either, I will admit.
Like, I find Hecka Hands actually upsetting both to look at and to say. Like, the name Hecka Hands just annoys me. I don't like Hecka Hands at all. The Eniacrafts are...
It's a novel archetype. It's
certainly
a flip effect and pendulum kind of thing.
Yeah, they exist. And then, like, the tunes are cool or whatever. It's just, I already know that's going to be the archetype.
Yeah, that's the archetype everybody kind of wants to build.
You can't get your hands on. Or at least it's going to cost more than the others. So don't know. It felt like a weaker lineup, but I've been critical of these sets before. And then I've found things to like anyway. So I could just be wrong again. Like, as you guys watch the pod, you already know I've been wrong many times.
However, there is an announcement of a new product, which is Rarity Collection 5.
Oh, yeah.
This took everybody by surprise because...
no one asked for it.
Zoom in on this. Yeah. No one really expected... Well, I don't say no one expected it, but we got 4 Rarity Collections. That's, the Core Century, Stampede, and Bonanza count as Rarity Collections in Konami's eyes anyway. And people have liked the Rarity Collections, although sometimes people do feel as though they have gone maybe a little bit... Not downhill, like it's kind of an up and down type of set, right?
I mean, they started off super, super hot, so to some degree, that has to happen. Mm-hmm. Though in this case, why I say no one asked for it, because I don't think we were really asking for reprints to the degree where we needed another Rarity Collection.
Yeah, I mean, I think it looks pretty neat, and there are some cards in it that did need reprints, so we'll see how it goes. Here's what they say. Rarity Collection 5 gives you a special variant art card in every pack like you've never seen before. It's still all foil, it's still all amazing, but it's also your first crack at some unique cards that we're going to get into here in a second. So just like the previous 4 Rarity Collections, Rarity Collection 5 revolves around an approximately 80-card set that's chock full of today's hottest tournament-level cards, plus some old favorites. From Chaos Angel to Castier Fenrir, from number C104 Umbral Horror Masquerade to Memento Tekel Combined Creation.
Yeah.
And many, many more. This is the best chance you'll have at getting today's meta-relevant cards for your deck. So Chaos Angel and Castier Fenrir off the bat were cards that needed reprints. Also, number C104 Umbral Horror Masquerade is one of those like old Zexal era cards that's only really useful kind of because of like 7th Tachyon and all that. Mm-hmm. But it was like $80 or $100. It was like really expensive. Because it was like only printed once in some pack.
That is hilarious.
In each 5-card pack, 4 slots pull from that main card pool in a variety of rarities, from the normal, super, ultra, and secret rares to Starlight, Platinum Secret, and the unique prismatic style ultimate and collector's rares found only in Rarity Collection sets. And like Bonanza and Stampede, the 5th card in each pack comes from a different card pool than the rest of the pack. But this time, so those last 2 times, that those different card pools are basically retro pools.
Yeah, the retro pools.
This time, each 5th card is one of dozens of new variant art cards.
So the variant arts are guaranteed.
So you are guaranteed a variant art in each pack.
I do like that change.
That sounds cool. Most Rarity Collection 5 variant art cards have little catchphrases like you'd use in a messaging app. Some in English, some in Japanese, plus the card arts have been adjusted with new backgrounds, highlights, added elements, and zoom-ins. You won't be finding cards quite like this anywhere except Rarity Collection 5. So here are some of the examples. You can see like there's a Trishula, a crossout designator that has the word no. Trishula says yes for some reason. I remember
these.
Yeah, you remember when these were announced in Japan?
Yeah, okay.
From OCG or whatever. Okay.
Oh, so that kind of sours my opinion a little bit.
What do you mean? I see IP Masquerina, I see Compulse, I see Zeus, I see Tri-Brigade Kit, and... Punk Jam Dragon Drive.
I know. I don't know. This feels like really afterthought-y because you look at the Trisha and you look at the Crossout Designator and you say, "Oh, look, they made cards for us." But then you realize, well, no, that was actually also just made for the Japanese audience, and you can tell because literally all the rest of the cards in that picture are in Japanese.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering when I saw.
And it's not even like. We have no clue what these cards say unless you can have a translator on hand.
So something that I was thinking about with this was when I first saw these, I was wondering, okay, are they going to change these to English? Because that would actually be kind of complicated, right? Mm. Like in Japan, a few kanji or whatever can like denote an entire like phrase or sentence.
Oftentimes multiple phrases.
Yeah. Whereas like in English, if you wanted to put, even just like one word is like several strings of characters that you got to fit into that tiny little square Yu-Gi-Oh! Text box. It might be kind of tough. So it seems like they just took the easy way. And I guess we're like, yeah, we're just not going to really change. Like, we're just going to just keep the Japanese text on them. So like, some are cool. Like, Crossout Designator saying no makes sense.
Feels like something
very fitting.
Designator would say.
I have no clue why Trishula saying yes.
Yes, as in I summoned Trisha and now I'm about to get rid of your cards. Yes.
Yes.
I guess.
I don't know. Now, I don't know what all cards are in here with this. I think that in the OCG, we can kind of get a good idea of the ones because they've all been.
Because, yeah, they're more than just there. These, I remember. I don't remember all of them, but I don't know. They don't look bad. Like, especially, I like the way the compost looks. It's just that I don't know what the compost says. And even if I find out what the compost says, it.
Yeet.
Yeah.
That's what you said.
I think it should have said yeet. I think. I would have liked a more westernized version of this, but I guess they don't want to do regional art variants.
Do you know what this kind of reminds me of?
What?
Okay. They also say there are other surprises in Rarity Collection 5 too, but more about that later, .. So I guess like there's more that we don't know that will be in.
Okay. Here. So I don't like that style of marketing because and this is my issue. They announced the product, and this is the product display page.
Yeah.
And then they showed it. The only picture on it is the booster pack, which does look cool. And
some examples of the
cards we've kind of already seen. If you have more surprises, something that we haven't seen, I'd rather see that on this page than, well, Japanese cards.
So here's the thing, though. We haven't seen these before.
Remember? Oh, Lord.
Because these are OCG cards, and TCG people have no idea the OCG exists, and it's completely separate. Because,
like, if we're going to do that train of thought, why are you selling me cards that have Japanese words on them that I can't read?
I have so many things to say, and I want to hear your thoughts on these as well.
Okay.
First of all, I think that these... I'm wondering if that other surprises thing is like the overframe cards, because we're supposed to get information on those overframe or frame break, whatever cards early next year is kind of the vibe that they've been saying. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if maybe those will be included in here and that's what they mean by like other surprises. Cause see, I'm thinking that the overframe cards are going to be included in many different sets and in many different styles. Yes. No. Do you think like that?
I mean, that sounds believable. That would make this extremely fire. It's like, Rarity Collection is historically a time to be hyped for Yu-Gi-Oh! So seeing these Japanese cards, I know they're in English, but they also have Japanese on them. I'm calling them Japanese cards. Seeing these Japanese cards on the front cover of a Rarity Collection, it whelmed me. I was like, that's not that exciting.
And I was also saying this a little bit earlier. I think like... these would have been cooler if Yu-Gi-Oh! Had overframe cards already. Because I just think, like, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Art box is so small to me.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, adding the text stuff is pretty cool as a concept. But imagine if this text was, like, kind of flying out of the frame. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so the art's kind of coming out of the frame. The text is kind of coming out of the frame. It's interesting because I recently have been trying out One Piece TCG a little bit. And what they do, especially for their event cards, is there will be like these like manga panels recreations, and they'll usually be full art, and like the text on the panel will kind of be like flying a little bit out of the border of the card, and it looks really cool because it's like, you know, the event will be called like, you know, Luffy is the man who will become the king of the pirates, like that's the name of the card that you're activating, and so it's kind of a big deal. I think that it would have been cool if like the no on Crossout Designator was like kind of a radial, like broke out of the frame. It'd feel more epic. I think the fact that it's all just contained inside is like a little bit weird. I think with some of them too, I'm looking at IP Mascarena and they just add this random white border around her because it's not normally in the card, you see?
Yeah, I do see that.
And so I think that I think that they may be trying to like make it be depicted like she's like a postcard or a stamp or something was what comes to mind. But Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards just don't have enough real estate to be chopping anything off. Or like,
why don't the other ones have the border?
Yeah, so I don't know exactly what that's about. And it makes these look a little bit, I guess, is choppy the word?
Maybe like, it's on accident. What if these are actually just...
like early test prints and not even like, finalized?
It's actually... So the card image itself is a separate PNG from the card around it. And they forgot to resize the IP Mascarena.
Yeah.
So like, there actually is no white border, but they just didn't they didn't expand it enough and fail the frame.
Yeah, there's some weird stuff going on. You know what, though? Some of the, like, the Zeus, they just took the background away from him. Like, I think that they did that for a few of these cars, is they whited out the background. I think, like, Tri Brigade Kit seems like they maybe did that, too.
I think that might be on purpose, so you could actually read what's said.
Yeah, I guess so that the text doesn't clash with the background. It's just, all I think of when I see this is, please hurry and give us the full art kind of frame break cards.
Yeah.
Because these feel like they're like a half step towards that without fully committing to it. And that's feels a little underwhelming in that way.
So these images, are these actual like WhatsApp or whatever messaging apps they use over in Japan? Do they actually have those?
Well, I mean, I'm sure Japan has its own set of messaging apps, and I guess these are, like, common phrases that you might say. Like, I'm assuming that these are their equivalents to, like, you know, LOL.
Because I was wondering if these card artworks were available as, like, some type of emoji in Japan.
Oh, hell no. I don't think they would go that far.
I mean,
I wonder why they even...
Because, like, if they're not, then I'm very confused why they made them.
Well, that's actually interesting. When you zoom out, what is the point of these cards? And I'm not entirely sure. Like, I guess that they're just supposed to be... We're not as familiar with maybe the way that Japanese culture and, like, products collaborative. Like, so maybe there's something I'm missing.
I only ever use three different emojis at any given time, so...
But I do wonder... Like, I don't know. I do wonder, like, kind of what the point of this is.
Maybe if we knew what they said, it would make more sense.
Yeah. If someone knows what they say and can do a good enough job of, like, explaining kind of how does whatever this is relate to Tri Brigade Kit.
Maybe right? The compulse, like, actually translates into yeet.
Maybe it does. Hmm. So the last bit of Yu-Gi-Oh! News for the week is that we did get a new Master Duel ban list and also just a new major Master Duel update. Let me see if I can find it real quick, because I had it up and then it went away.
I feel like we shouldn't call it a ban list when it comes to Master Duel, since banning is typically not on the table. I know we have recently banned cards in Master Duel, but I mean, how many cards in total is that now?
Like, they don't ban too much, but this time they did do a good chunk of bans.
Oh?
So it was Malice Red Ransom finally got outright banned.
Okay.
Also Arc Lord Christia. This was something that was used in the Gem Knight Tier Lament. Little fairy hybrid deck I've encountered it unranked.
I did not know that was a thing, and it's horrifying.
Yeah, so those two cards got banned, and then they unbanned Supreme King Dragon Starving Venom. So that's one that can copy effects. So I'm worried about, like, what that might mean, but...
It had to go in a TCG for a reason.
Either way, though, the big headline is just that Red Ransom is banned, and Malice, with that banning, should kind of be out of the upper tiers of commission.
Ding dong, Malice is dead.
Yeah, and Malice is, that's a big deal, I think, because, like, Malice is, I think most would agree, directly responsible for the drop in, like, player numbers over the entire year since they've been out nearly a year. Like, it's, people just kind of quit. Malice is, it's the peak of miserable to play against decks. It's so strong. It plays forever, and, like, if it goes first, you're usually in, you know the routine. This is Yu-Gi-Oh, right? Now, the other exciting things, though, is that they did release new selection packs that have caught us up on a lot of stuff people have really wanted. They finished the Snake Eyes lore with, like, Vengeance Dragon and Poplar and all of that. Very cool. They added a Diabellstar Mate, which a lot of people really like. That's a really popular one. They have also introduced some of the alt arts for, like, Pot of Extravagance, Diabellstar, of course, Eldritch and Lady Labyrinth of the Silver Castle. We got, like, mates for, or like a field for Labyrinth, sleeves for Eldritch, all these cool things. It's just very, like, nice aesthetic stuff that people might buy.
Honestly, the way, like, Labyrinth and Eldritch, it kind of just sounds like these were things that were designed a while ago and they just finally got them out.
Oh, yeah, these were. These are all, because this was stuff that was like, the Eldritch Pot of Extravagance was, remember when we opened, like, the Tactical Tridex?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, like, stuff like that was already in those, so.
I did like that art for it.
And then they did just release, or this week, as you're listening to this, in fact, they're releasing Draco Tail finally into the game. Ooh. Alongside Artmage and the Odeon cards, the, like, Apophis monsters. So that's all coming in Upcoming selection pack, Aerial Superiority, which features a bunch of different cool fusion monsters.
I would say this is going to bring me back to Master Duel, but I mean, who are we kidding?
Yeah, so that'll be interesting. And then the Duelist Cup is happening like next week. So all these new cards get freshly thrown into the fray. Malice, you know, kind of gets pushed out. And we get to see how miserable this Duelist Cup will be.
I mean, you know, like what do you think the best deck in Master Duel is now?
Well, I guess when this stuff comes out, I feel like Draco Tail Branded will probably be like, I would assume the top of the... And maybe, I don't know though.
Master Duel is such a mysterious format, being best of one and having more unbanned cards than we have in a TCG. I never know what to expect from that format.
Neither do I. But that's all the Yu-Gi-Oh! News, or at least the major stuff. So...
On to more trading card game stories.
Trading card games. This one's a Magic the Gathering one.
What you got?
This is actually funny because it's sort of an update to the one that you brought up 2 weeks ago. Secret Lair X Monster Hunter.
Oh?
We talked about this and we went over all the new cards. Well, the update is that they are kind of retracting it all. And they're going to sort of be taking it back. And here's what they say. Back to the drawing board with Secret Lair X Monster Hunter. This is an official press release from Wizards of the Coast. Do you have it pulled up?
Yeah, I'm looking at it now, yeah.
Yeah, so what do they say about it? What's the deal?
Let's cut to the chase. The Secret Lair Monster Hunter Super Drop we revealed last week fell short of expectations. We heard loud and clear that you were disappointed, and we believe we can do better. So, we're going to postpone this release and rework this Super Drop entirely.
This is interesting because I don't have like a history with Magic, so I don't know if they've ever like pulled a Secret Lair before release, like after announcing.
I've never heard of it.
But yeah, it sounds like, you know, they say like me and you are big fans of Monster Hunter, that's why we put the Super Drop together, but we missed the mark on elements like card selection and faithfully integrating the world and mechanics. The overall construction is not up to the standard you've come to expect. Pulling Super Drops back is not something we're going to do very often, but we're committed to doing better. Capcom is on board for us to take another swing at this Super Drop. So we're going to pull this one back and share new details and updated release dates in a few months. Keep an eye out for information in 2026.
I didn't know we had a line of feedback when it came to Secret Lairs.
I didn't either.
Because, I mean, I always assume that because these are limited releases that... You either like it or you don't, and regardless, the window closes, and that's that. I never thought.
Yeah, like I always felt like, okay, we've announced it; it's coming out. Like it or don't.
And then, so I'm not tapped into Magic Gathering social media like that. I didn't know people hated the Secret Lair.
Yeah, I hadn't heard. I looked at it.
It looked fine to me, but as you guys know, I'm very, very casually a Magic player, so. But what I saw didn't seem bad, but I guess it was bad enough. What did y'all do?
Yeah, I guess, so the gist that I got, because I did a little bit of digging, and not much, is just that people thought, that, and I don't play Monster Hunter, so it was hard for me to even really, I think, like, synthesize what I was reading. But I guess that they just didn't, the monsters or, like, the characters that they chose to represent weren't what people wanted. So, and, someone who knows more, maybe.
And that's, I guess that makes sense, but, like, for all the Secret Lairs before now, have we felt 100% certain that they represented their franchise as well? It's weird to me that now we've like crossed the line with Monster Hunter. Like, how do you even define whether or not it represents the IP or franchise? This is so out of left field, and it's rare for a company to hear feedback for like limited drops and then actually endeavor to make changes to it. So I guess hats off to Wizard in that regard. But I have to wonder, what did you freaks do to them? Like what did y'all do to make yourselves heard like that?
Yeah, I wonder what, because like it's interesting that this is, like you said, like this is the line, because I mean people bitched about like Spider-Man a bunch. Like I know people hated that.
And Magic Gathering players have been loud about so many things, and Wizards has kind of just turned their nose up.
And it's strange too, because like isn't a Secret Lair, it is, yeah, isn't a Secret Lair kind of like, that's just the type of thing that I wouldn't expect to get changed. Like
yeah, it,
Or actually, I guess, never mind. Actually, let me take a step back. I suppose a mainline set would be much harder to change.
Yes.
Because there's more cards, more writing on it. It probably has to be like designed more carefully and like further in advance. But I always saw Secret Lairs as like these things that just sort of were seen as skippable, like mm-hmm. harmless in that way. Like if you like that IP or that like franchise, you would pick up this Secret Lair and be like happy with it. And if you didn't like it, then you just kind of didn't bother. And the assumption was like, well, even if this does a bad job of representing Monster Hunter or whatever this, you know, there's like a Sonic Secret Lair, right? Even if it doesn't do a good job of representing it, who cares? Like, because, like, as a Sonic fan, I don't care if they represent Sonic's abilities well in Magic. Like, that doesn't mean much to me, I would think. But it sounds like this one instance, like this Secret Lair got, there's so much pushback or somehow missed the mark somehow that they were... It's bizarre. I don't know.
It feels strange, almost to the point where I wonder if this actually has anything to do with fans at all.
Oh, good question. Do you think like something else happened? Maybe Capcom wasn't pleased.
Put on my little tinfoil hat. Yeah, I mean, it feels like somebody higher up within Wizards or even Capcom themselves are like, "Hey, I don't really like the way this turned out." And then Wizards is like, "Oh well, we can change it." And they're like, "Well, how are we gonna announce that? Oh, we'll just say that they told us to change it, so we did."
The thing is, though, whoever's high up from Capcom would have seen it before fans did, or maybe they didn't see it.
Or maybe they didn't. You know, just because these are like multi-billion-dollar companies doesn't mean they have great communication.
Suppose so. So yeah, we won't know any more about that for a few more months. A shame. I know that you're a Monster Hunter fan and Alex as well, so I guess you guys are just going to have nothing you can possibly buy for a few months.
I wasn't going to buy it.
Oh, you weren't?
No.
Never mind. I remember,
I've already rationed out my Magic spending.
Well, so here's how that goes, Alex. Let me tell you a little secret. Even if you're never intending to buy something, you still have to pretend to be an angry fan and scream.
No. I think it's fine to not like want to monetarily invest in something. It doesn't mean you have to hate it.
You need to stop being rational.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah,
this is terrible. Wizards is a horrible company.
Yeah, Wizards is horrible. This product I wasn't going to buy anyway is terrible and the downfall of the game I love so much. Whatever, I don't know.
But, you know, at the same time, I got to remain marketable. So, Wizards, you're doing a great job.
Yeah. I'm joking, by the way. But, yeah, I know, like, people will kind of get angry about stuff online. I'm just like, well. Anyway, okay.
I don't think it's worth being angry about. But
yeah,
maybe I'm not a big enough Monster Hunter fan to...
Or you don't fall in the cross section of Monster Hunter and Magic fan.
That's where, like, true. You do perfect. Need to be both, I think.
All right. What other gaming or card gaming news do we have?
So I have Pokemon Crime.
The Pokemon theft stories are back.
Yeah, I had
people
to,
have
had
really
to do
been
a few guys.
People been campaigning for these to come back, and I'm glad that you've delivered.
For so long, there weren't really many, and then my news searching on Google has been terrible. But in this case, I have two in one.
Oh,
that's right, two
a double
Cape
whammy.
Cod, two Cape Cod trading card shops burglarized. Rare Pokemon cards stolen. I really hate the modern article title. Like,
I mean, it's,
what kind of title is that?
It's journalistic style. Like, that's it's written in journalistic style.
Just
I know because I. Went to college for that for a while.
Anyway, so the first one is the Giannis or Giannis trading card theft. I'm assuming Giannis or Giannis is a place. Vanguard Tabletops Gaming in Giannis is a hub for players of games like Pokemon and was hit by a thief late Monday night.
That's pretty recent.
This is recent.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah, this article is on the December 3rd? Okay.
Surveillance video shows a person smashing through a glass door wearing a face covering and beanie and rummaging quickly through Star Wars and Magic the Gathering cards. So you know they're in their 30s. That was an anecdote, not in the article. They grabbed things quickly, and because the alarm was going off so badly, they were out literally under 2 minutes, manager Rob Zeta said. Zeta, who began working at the store as a way to connect with his children after his wife died, oh my God, said burglary has left his family shaken. She's scared to come back, so that's hard, Zeta said of his 9-year-old daughter. He believes replacing the broken door may be their most significant financial hit. They were still calculating inventory Tuesday afternoon. So yeah, this is so recent, they don't even know how much was stolen. But the emotional toll is far greater. When something like this happens, it's frustrating, he says. So before we get to the second story, quick notes about this. So this is a run-of-the-mill smash and grab.
Yeah, I see the video playing over here on the side. Yeah, these people are like kind of in and out in like less than 2 minutes. They're just, it's a guy, he's got like these masks on, they're grabbing products, shoving it into backpacks.
And you know, and I hate theft and no one should do it, but I'm at least glad they wore masks.
I mean, I guess that's rule number one, right?
But, you know, I feel like they're telling on themselves a little bit. Going immediately to Star Wars and Magic the Gathering, way to age yourself. Kind of helping defeat the purpose of that mask.
Yeah, definitely letting people know you're fucking 40 years old. but in all seriousness, no, this is actually really terrible. I know that these small shops often can't afford these thefts.
Nope.
We have talked about this at length, but like, it's, I'm always... The thing is, like, typically the people that are robbing these stores are oftentimes, like, regulars. Or if not regulars, like, they have visited the store before. It's like that age-old thing where, like, you're more likely to... Crime that happens to you is more likely to be from someone that you know, not, like, a random criminal. And so it's like, well, if that's the case, then that means that you knew, right? Like, you know that this is, like, your local store, and you know there's a community here, and you probably are... You've probably spoken to those shop owners and stuff, and it's like... To still do that really sucks. So
my theory is that this one actually is not a regular at that shop. And this is why I think so.
Okay.
Typically, a regular will have clocked where all the most expensive and rare items in the shop are.
Oh, yeah.
In this video, he kind of just goes for whatever. And he has to, and he moves quick, and he's gone quick. And it's like, if that was a regular, they would have quickly went to, like, the most expensive cards in the shop. They wouldn't have bothered with random Magic the Gathering and Star Wars cards. They would have hit up the binders or the display case.
True, true. Okay.
But in this next one, a lot more was stolen. So maybe this is a regular. $40,000 of merchandise stolen in Mashpee. Mashpee? Mashpee?
Mashpee, Mashpee.
Whatever. The break-in shares notable similarities to another burglary just days earlier about 20 minutes away at Darkwater Games in Mashpee. Someone just comes in and just rips it all away from you. It's just like ripping out your heart, owner Robert Drexler said. Late Thanksgiving night, wow.
What a great day to do this.
So some people were with their family, some people were at the club, and some people were knocking over card shops. Late Thanksgiving night, someone smashed through a door at his shop. Video shows a suspect wearing goggles, a similar beanie, and a face covering loading up a duffel bag with rare graded Pokemon cards.
Well, this person certainly does seem more deliberate with the cards they're taking.
Theft suspect inside Darkwater... Oh, that's a picture. That's a description of the picture.
Yeah, a little picture.
When Drexler arrived on Black Friday, he found holes in the walls, shattered glass, and empty shelves.
Holes in the walls?
Oh, wow. Now that we've done a full inventory, it's turning out to be right about $40,000, Drexler said. Giannis and Mashpee police are investigating both burglaries, though no arrests have been made. Drexler is hoping that that the surveillance photos and serialized numbers on the graded items could help lead police to the suspects. Despite the losses, both owners say the outpouring of support from loyal customers has been overwhelming.
Yeah.
So, now yeah, this
that's
one...
Sad. That's why they have to fucking break the walls?
It sounds like they were taking... Because... It sounds like this wasn't reported until the next morning. So no alarm, nor is no significant alarm was triggered. So they probably broke in and then took their time taking everything. I mean, they got 40 grand worth of merchandise. They were up, they were stripping walls.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still fixated on this, like, breaking big holes in the walls things. Like, I guess they're just pulling and yanking things out of walls. Like,
because if like, let's say they had like giant cards or something, and, you know, giant cards,
maybe or like some yeah, I know what you mean, like a, or a shelf even like
they,
that was
this
like
is crazy to rip the whole shelf down. But I mean, once you've already broken through the like the door of a business to rob it, I guess you don't care if it's a clean break in. You're just gonna mess the place up some. It is crazy how close up this shot of the burglar is. I know you can't really. You can't identify a person based on this, but
It does indicate, though, that they're fairly close to the camera. Or maybe this is a cropped-in photo.
It could be a cropped-in photo. I really wish in this case, like the last one, that they had like a loud enough and active alarm mm-hmm. where they could have at least cut the robbery short. Because without there being an alarm, the robber just felt like, oh, I can just sit in here and take everything I want.
Yeah,
check off my little Christmas list.
With the first theft, it was like the camera like saw them, and then the alarm went off so loudly that they had to like rush out. They just grabbed what they could and rushed out. Whereas this guy seems like took their sweet time.
Took his time. Didn't even get reported to the next morning. I mean,
what the fuck? Thanksgiving, golly, what a guy.
Just go to the club like everybody else, or I guess spend time with your family. Like, but knocking over card shops, even if it's not Thanksgiving night, you really shouldn't be doing this. But I have to say, I am glad that they are at least trying not to get caught. You know, a lot of burglars are nowadays, they just be walking around no mask, fingerprints everywhere. Like, come on now, at least try.
Well, speaking of high value cards, GameStop gives someone a historic $30,000 trade-in payout for an ultra rare Pokemon card. Then takes aim at the trolls for some reason.
So someone traded them a card and they gave them $30,000?
Yeah, this apparently set their record. So here's what they say.
Okay.
This is coming to us from PC Gamer. GameStop's been on a roll with bizarre trade-ins as of late. After announcing Trade Anything Day, and an idea that sounds more like a sketch comedy bit than a real thing, it's awarded a record-setting payout of over $30,000 to a customer who handed in a fully authenticated PSA 10 holo Gengar card. So this is the first part of the story. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, GameStop, they take PSA graded cards now. They're getting really deep into the whole like Pokemon cards grading, you know, all of that, right?
Right.
And so this person had like a grade 10 Gengar and they traded in. Cool. What do you think of that? Like, I mean, just somebody going to GameStop, would you?
Was that $30,000 in cash or was that $30,000 in store credit?
I'd love to know.
Because that makes a huge difference.
I'd actually love to know. Because it's like, I'm sorry, no offense to GameStop. Or actually plenty of offense to GameStop. Who cares? What the fuck are you going to spend $30,000 on at GameStop? Like, what? There's nothing worth it?
You start buying, I guess you buy a Switch too.
And then leave.
And then buy
as many games as you can and go. I mean,
I don't even know. Like, that's tough.
I was actually at a GameStop this past weekend.
Did you trade in a holo Gengar?
No, they actually did have like some $1 holo Pokemon cards, which I thought was like kind of neat. You could like sift through them and it'd make like a good gift for a kid. But I'm just always reminded of how I didn't get you one.
Wow. Just say it'll make a good gift.
For a kid. Oh, wait, so you're a kid?
At heart?
Okay. Yeah, I saw just like a bunch of GameStop. I'm just reminded how much junk they've got on those shelves. Like, some of the merch is very cool. It's like kind of cool, officially licensed stuff. And then some of it is just so much like, this is just cheap Chinese like crap that's just stuck an IP on it. Like, Hatsune Miku drink tumbler that's just like cheaply screen printed on, or, you know, some random little kids thing you've never heard of. It's just all over the place. There was also some crypto card game I saw on the shelf. Like, there was like a crypto game, and it was like, I guess like if you can pull Bitcoin or something out of the packs. I don't know. It's like just a lot of junk, to be honest. But anyway, here's what they had to say as well. They made an X post where GameStop announced the historic trade, which it calls the most valuable single trade-in ever recorded at any GameStop location.
It's saying GameStop history, but, you know, this history is very short. They only started doing this this year. So it is a little crazy to start something this year and say, this is the most in history.
Yeah, it goes on to say, furthermore, any trolls who publicly claim that GameStop trade-in values are bad are hereby factually and demonstrably incorrect. Any prior and ongoing objections to our trade values are now deemed without merit and factually invalid. So they're kind of taking a jab at like the people who always talk about how GameStop will give you like $7.50 for your 10 games. How do you feel about this post that they've made? Because here's the thing. It's on one hand, I think it's like mean, but I also thought it was a joke. Do you think it's like, what do you think?
I mean, I think of it as a joke. I mean, I don't think there's much. Can you even take a post like this seriously? It doesn't mean anything.
Well, I guess because people were angry.
Well, yeah, but it's social media.
Yeah, I know. It's like people didn't take it as a joke.
People always get angry. Like, the thing is, like, GameStop is 100% responsible for their own trade-in rates. They've known that they've been undervalue trades. They've done it for decades, and that is their reputation. So they turned it into a little joke here. Now you can't say anything about our trade-in value because we just paid a guy $30,000 for a Gengar that's worth $33,000. Like,
yeah,
we underpaid him. So what you got to say now?
GameStop's been on this kind of strange trajectory lately, where they're part of their marketing, I think, is like really effective. They've been doing this thing where they make their announcements as like those shareable posts type of things you see, where it's like the headline and like a quote and like some picture, you know. They make those themselves, and I think it's a trade anything day or whatever. Like, it is good at attention grabbing, but on the other hand, I don't know that there's, like they mentioned in this article, Battlefield 6 is less than 2 months old and only gets you $27.50 in store credit. Like,
nice.
So I mean, yeah, I either way though, I guess that if GameStop really does take in PSA graded cards, then I suppose there is some merit to the idea that, like, this could, if you're like one of these PSA grading types who does this, I don't know how to best describe it, but, you know, who does the PSA thing with your Pokemon cards. One of the things that always kind of worried me about PSA grading and like all that is, like, how do you actually find somebody who's going to buy this stuff? Like, it's great to say that, like, this Umbreon card is worth, you know, like $3,000 or whatever, PSA 10. But like, who's buying it? Like, no one in your local town probably is. I guess you have to go to eBay and then like take your 9% seller fee or whatever and ship it. All these things. So it's like, I guess if you can actually just go to GameStop and trade them in and get what I suppose is reasonable value for it, I'm sure it's still a big undercut, but what we'll call reasonable value, then that is providing something to the aspiring PSA vendor dude type.
And I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on.
Okay.
I mean, how legit is this really? In the world of collectibles, collectibles change hands constantly. How do we know that Gengar was not originally GameStop's?
Yeah.
And like, the guy bought it from them and then sold it to them. And it's like, this is our biggest sale in history.
It's like literally a GameStop employee.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that's not the case. But I say that to like kind of point at how kind of ludicrous this all is. That Gengar, like, sure, they sold it to GameStop for $30,000, but then GameStop's gonna go behind it and sell it for $30,000 to somebody else. Then someone else is gonna sell it to somebody else for $30,000. It's just gonna keep moving. So I don't even know what kind of achievement is this really.
I'm sometimes reminded of how, like, even if, like, I get that their post is tongue in cheek, so it's whatever. But like, people trading in PSA graded cards to and from GameStop doesn't really affect in my opinion anyway, does not affect GameStop's appeal as like a general store. Like, no one actually has a $30,000 Gengar, so this doesn't matter to anyone reading this headline. Do you know what I mean? Like, what, like, who, great. Like, I mean, I guess if you have a card like that, you'll know how much it's worth, and you probably won't even really be going to GameStop to do that trade. There might be better places. Or maybe they want to become that place for people. But there's another Pokemon story I saw with this, and I don't have it on the raindrop because I couldn't find a great one. But basically, that new Charizard, what is the name of this? This new Pokemon set that's got a Charizard on it. GameStop was selling it for like way more than the MSRP. So it's like, let me see if I can find it.
When like, brick and mortar retailers are charging market price. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So it's like Pokemon Mega Evolution or whatever. And there's
this is that set that I remember got like leaked or sold early or something.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. And so like there's like an ETB and like this big like box thing that comes with a bunch of stuff in it. Maybe it's Phantasmal. Flames, whatever it's called.
That does sound
the MSRP for this product is like $119 for like the big box of stuff, and GameStop was selling it for $199. In fact, I saw something earlier today where they were doing like they doubled the MSRP of some other recent ETB product. So basically, the long story short is like GameStop is participating in like markups, like
they're charging market price, yo.
Yeah, they're charging market price, and like they're kind of like part of the scalping situation.
See, up until recently, we always trusted the established retailers to keep MSRPs. You know, we couldn't trust our card shops to do it, and which is a shame. But you know, when you bought cards like Walmart or Target or GameStop, you assume that you're going to get them at the, or at least as very close to the MSRP price.
Right.
But GameStop said, it's like the economy's rough right now. I'm trying to make a dollar. So we're going to price it at whatever is competitive.
Yeah. Twilight Masquerade, I think is what this is called. Yeah, it's this. This Mega Charizard.
It certainly on looks here. Like a Mega Charizard X.
Yeah. So they're charging a bunch of money for it. People were very upset. I didn't look into the details, so I won't comment too much on it, but it just does suck that if a, you know, I mean, you expect a retailer to charge MSRP. Maybe your local card shop will try to scalp you and upcharge, but like at least the big box retailer would have a, I guess not. I don't know.
You know, this is another sign that GameStop's really struggling. They got to make a buck however they can.
It's a recession indicator, which they always say online.
A recession indicator. GameStop's price gouging.
Yeah, a recession indicator. Okay. Well, that's all the trading card game news, I believe, that we have.
That does look like all of them, yes.
There is other interesting stuff, though. One of the big stories that I saw, there's two AI stories.
Oh, no.
And these are a little different than like your usual AI stories, but no less frustrating.
They're not going to make me happy, are they?
Have you heard about the AI anime dub thing with Amazon? I mentioned this, I think, to you the other day.
So I shouldn't know, but I was sent a...
I'm sorry, geez. You can use my name.
Wait, did you send it?
Maybe, I don't know.
I don't know.
I think I did. Either way.
I was sent a AI dub of Banana Fish. Was that you?
That was probably... I think that was me.
Okay. Then, yeah. So, yes, I am familiar.
So what do you know about this?
All I know is that Amazon is getting into the the anime dubbing game, and they decided to run straight to AI to get it done. They did not pass go, they did not click their 200. They went directly to AI.
Yeah, Amazon halts anime AI dub beta after widespread ridicule. So Amazon appears to have quietly removed its terrible AI-generated English dubs for several anime shows currently streaming on Prime Video, following widespread ridicule from viewers and industry professionals. AI dubs were recently added to Banana Fish, which, by the way, amazing anime. So good.
Not the dub.
Yeah, not whatever this dub is, but No Game, No Life and Vinland Saga. Where
absolutely okay. All right. Whoa.
Yeah, this is the this is the line for
yo,
you.
Those are three fire anime, and Amazon wanted to vomit AI all over those. Why not do that on some trash?
I mean,
like, yeah. Vinland Saga? Oh, hell. No Game.
Yeah. As shows that previously only offered English subtitles, the option of a dub for those who prefer it could have been seen as a win for Amazon. But it quickly became clear the dubs were really quite bad, completely devoid of any emotion or convincing intonation in dramatic moments. Particularly awful clips of the AI English dub for Banana Fish soon started circulating on social media, and the National Association of Voice Actors released a statement in which it branded the dubs AI slop. In his own statement, voice actor Damon Mills called the AI-generated dub for Banana Fish a massive insult to us as performers. He says that voice actors deserve the same level of respect as on-camera performers. Anime already pays talent very little. Dub production costs shouldn't make a dent in these companies' pocketbooks. Using AI for a dub of a show that released nearly 8 years ago and had no rush schedule, just spits in our faces, has infuriated the consumer, and completely destroys the art. So,
yo, I know a lot of you guys didn't watch Banana Fish. If you haven't, you really should. It's one of the greatest stories you can watch in anime, like, hands down. I watched the AI slap video of the dub of Banana Fish, and I don't think I've ever seen something so terrible get published by such a large corporation. It's not, guys, it's not that this dub was kind of bad or, oh, it's just not very good. Like, I mean, you can go to Netflix for bad dubbing. It definitely exists. But that dub was atrocious. Tones were everywhere. Their word choice was not great.
Yeah, it's that dead sounding, awkward. You couldn't
tell if characters were angry or happy or much of anything. And in one sentence, a character might sound angry, sad, happy all at once. It was terrible.
So this actually reminds me of a little small tidbit I found out about the AI commentator thing from Master Duel of Worlds. Do you remember this? We talked about how like awful it sounded. Okay, I was informed a few months ago, I guess, that AI dub thing that they did for Master Duel was actually apparently supposed to be two separate commentators. And that's part of why it sounded so awful. So when we watched it, you know, I showed you some clips of it.
I remember.
They were talking about how like it kind of, the intonation's always changing, the accents are always changing. Sometimes it's like speaking in third person and sometimes it's like in first person. Apparently it's supposed to be like two voice act. It's like emulating two different voice actors, like how a typical commentary desk might be.
I did not catch that.
So I guess like one is kind of the color commentator and one's the like play-by-play or, you know, kind of analysis one. And it still doesn't make it any better. Like I still thought it was atrocious and I couldn't even tell. But apparently that's what they were trying to emulate.
They did not succeed.
But back to this. Turns out Kadokawa stated it did not approve of an AI dub. So the companies that like are actually in charge of these anime, like that own the rights to them, had no idea that this was even happening.
That makes perfect sense. I don't see why a publishing an anime publishing company would ever be like, yeah, go ahead and like make some garbage out of my work. Like, we don't take pride in this. This isn't how we make our money.
Anime News Network basically reached out to Aniplex regarding the Banana Fish English and Latin American Spanish dubs on Friday. And to Kadokawa and Sentai Filmworks /Hidive about the No Game No Life ones. Kadokawa stated that it has not approved an AI dub in any form. Sources at Hidive stated that it was, quote, not aware in advance of the AI dub and is looking into it with Amazon. So it sounds like Amazon really was, like, this is just a beta where they're just doing what they want and, like, publishing and making it public. And
like, I didn't see the other two dubs, but just off the Banana Fish AI dub, and I never, you know, I never say this. I honestly think Amazon should be sued. I think they should be sued. And I think we should do a class action lawsuit just for having to have to hear that garbage. I feel like there should be multiple lawsuits. This has to be punished within an inch of their breathing lives. Art is so important that to tarnish art unnecessarily. It'd be one thing if these companies signed off on this horrible, terrible, terrible idea. Then it's their fault. But Amazon took it into their own hands to try to ruin some of the best anime we've ever gotten. Which, one, tells me Amazon does not give a fuck about anime and anime viewers. And two, it tells me that they don't even care about putting out good like products.
Yeah, you know, I've actually seen that there are some sites that are finally kind of getting around to this whole, like, trying to ban AI posts and AI art. And I think that, like, it is at a point where the only way that there's going to really be able to be any pushback around this is there's going to have to be sites that actually actively, like, prohibit you from posting it. And even that's not, like, enough, right? Like, there's people can try to fake something and kind of make it seem as though, but like it's the only way, because I don't, like I've said before in this podcast, I think like use like AI to synthesize some info, I guess that's fine, whatever, but like AI dubbing, AI, have you seen this rise in like AI anime? Like there's some app I saw, because I've seen ads for it, where like it'll make like an AI fight scene. You just enter two characters like Vegeta and Luffy fighting, and like it'll just generate a little 10-second. Yeah, like there's just stuff like that, and it's.
Look, man, when are we finally gonna just be honest about this whole AI bullshit? Because a lot of promises are made about how useful it would be and how much fun it would be online. I think by now the jury is out and everyone can kind of just agree, and unless you're blind, deaf, and dumb, that AI is trash and doesn't need to be in our lives. Especially not online, in like on social media, in art circles. Like, we don't need it in our videos. We don't need it in our posts. We don't need it in our music. We don't need it anywhere.
Yeah, so that's the first AI story. Because remember, there's a second. This one is just kind of annoying.
Can I just repeat what I said, but like again?
Yeah, I'll just, in the edit, I'll just take that line from you and I'll just edit that over whatever you say. All right, Alec, this one's going to be fun.
Okay.
Why stop at AI use? We could have mandatory disclosures for what shampoo brand the developer uses. Epic boss Tim Sweeney says Steam should ditch its AI-generated content disclosure. So, here's the story here.
Okay.
As the debate around the use of generative AI to build video games rages on, Tim Sweeney, the boss of Fortnite developer Epic Games, has waded in to call on Valve to ditch its AI-generated content disclosure for Steam games. Valve's rules, the current ones they have, mean developers must disclose their use of AI-generated content on a game's Steam store page. For example, the Steam page for Embark Studios' Ark Raiders includes a note from the developer on how the game uses AI-generated content. It says, during the development process, we may use procedural and AI-based tools to assist with content creation. Well, also, Activision's Call of Duty includes an AI disclosure. Sweeney, though, believes there's no point in having such disclosures because pretty much all video games will use AI. Responding to one Twitter or X user who called on Steam and all digital marketplaces to drop the made with AI label because, quote, it doesn't matter anymore, Sweeney agreed, adding, quote, the AI tag is relevant to art exhibits for authorship disclosure and to digital content licensing marketplaces where buyers need to understand the rights situation. It makes no sense for game stores where AI will be involved in nearly all future production. His tweet sparked much debate about the rights and wrongs of Steam's policy here. So, according to him, is my understanding of it, he thinks that Steam should not have that disclosure where the, you know, a developer has to say this because, well, all the games are going to use AI in the future. Eventually, you'll use AI to make every game. So, like, we need to get rid of this logo label thing. Thoughts?
Maybe if this was coming from someone other than Tim Sweeney, this, like, that statement would mean something to me. But for someone whose job is to sell video games for and make as much money off them as humanly possible, I just you know, it's weird. It just doesn't feel like this is coming from a altruistic place. I don't know.
I know exactly what he wants and why he's upset about the whole idea of AI labels.
And that this, the crazy part about him making the statement is I think everybody knows what he wants.
It's very transparent.
This is not hidden in the slightest.
If there's an AI label on a game, then there's a subset of consumers who simply won't buy it. And he doesn't like the idea that he has to reveal that information or that any publisher has to reveal that information because that could cost them sales.
And this is Tim Sweeney of Epic, right?
Epic Games, yeah.
You know, the people who also own Unreal?
Yeah.
So it also stands to reason that his company owns the Unreal Engine, one of the most popular gaming engines to build off of. It stands to reason that his company wants to use AI to cut costs, to save money as much as they can, and would not want their engine to get this kind of black mark on it because anyone using it going forward would catch an AI label.
That's right. He doesn't want that, and so because, you know, his pockets are threatened effectively.
Like,
and I think that I don't agree with him. I think that you should always at least be able to know if AI was used in a game's development. Even if it becomes a ubiquitous thing and there's more games that are going to use it, that doesn't change the consumer's right to know, in my opinion.
I think of it the same way I think about the groceries I purchase every day. Mm-hmm. You know, when we ingest lots of food, our food all have nutrition facts on them. And those nutrition facts are mandated and have to be on them. Certain chemicals and processes that are used in making your food have to be disclosed, whether it's artificial dyes or genetically modified whatever, and certain pesticides. One, because it can be a danger to your health. But two, the consumer has a right to know what they're consuming. And yeah, we do consume video games. We don't eat them. But if I'm going to pay you, what they want to make us pay like $80 for games now. Yeah. If I'm going to pay you $80, I want to trust that that I'm getting a real, authentic game that has as little AI in it as humanly possible.
Yeah.
And if you take that right away from me, I will find the games I can trust and only play those forever.
You know, when I think about this, this does make sense. Fortnite's been using AI, like the AI Darth Vader story.
Yeah. Epic is a big proponent of AI. And in fact, I would not be surprised if in the very near future, Fortnite like just starts having generated worlds.
Yeah.
I promise you I won't be playing. But that is... that just seems like something that's on the horizon for them. And they don't like all the AI pushback because it can save them so much money.
Yeah.
Well, I don't care about Tim Sweeney saving money. The amount of money Tim Sweeney wastes is more money than I'll see in my life. So
I think that the main thing, too, is like we all know that as fun as he likes to make AI sound, like I know he's quoted in the past as saying like soon, you know, you'll be a small 10-person team will be able to build a game like Zelda Breath of the Wild in which the AI is just doing all the dialogue and you're writing some character synopsis. That's going to be within reach over the next few years.
Nintendo should sue him for saying
that. Yeah, Nintendo already, they're not really big AI fans. But the thing is, like, he doesn't want to talk about how many people will lose their jobs. Like, he's framing it as, like, yeah, this small 10-person indie team can make a huge, ambitious game. What he's not saying is that he would ideally have the 100-person team that worked on Fortnite or whatever, 200-person, however big it is, be 10 people.
Yeah.
And they just have to, like, oversee a few things, type in some AI prompts, and it generates, like, the whole world in game mode.
What he doesn't want to say is he doesn't actually care if the quality of the game suffers as long as they can save money.
And you will buy it either way because you won't know. Because, like, you know, your kids and your parents and random, like, gamers who don't keep their nose and ears to the ground will just think like it's just the same game as usual. So at least an AI disclosure allows you to make that decision for yourself. Like there will be some people who don't give a shit and will buy it either way. Fine. But I think that you should at least be able to know.
You know, fun fact, you know, ever since the AI Darth Vader thing, I've actually only played Fortnite like 3 times.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I played Fortnite so much until that happened. That took the wind out of my sails, man. It really did.
Yeah, so that's our AI stuff.
McDonald's new Grinch meal finally ports Shake Shake fries to the U.S.
Wait, whoa. You're talking about the... I haven't read this yet. Are you talking about the fries where it's like you put in like the sauce stuff? Like there's like a sauce packet and like you put the fries in it and you, like you shake it?
Yeah, I think so.
They used to have that at Burger King and those were so good.
I remember that in Burger
King. Ooh, those were good.
Well, so the Shake Shake fries, it's further in the article, but I can talk about it now. Like, Shake Shake fries have been a thing in McDonald's around the world. I think, what did it say? Like, the Philippines, Hong Kong, Taiwan, they've all had the Shake Shake fries. But we don't have them, but this new Grinch meal is our first taste of them.
I'm excited.
Back to the top of the article.
Okay.
So on December 2nd, that is yesterday for us at the time of recording, McDonald's new limited time only Grinch meal becomes available around the country. This Christmas themed meal, which comes with a pair of limited time festive holiday socks, is packaged in special bags featuring the Grinch, and contains a medium drink, 10 McNuggets or a Big Mac, and some dill pickle Grinch salt McShaker fries.
I gotta have it.
So McShaker fries seem to be the Shake fries that they have in other places around the world. These are dill pickle flavored, and I'm not sure how I feel about that because I don't like pickles. Shake fries
come packaged with a seasoning pack and a bag. You dump the fries and a seasoning pack into the bag, close the top, shake it a few times. Oh my gosh, Alec, we're getting them. I have to have
them. I don't like pickles.
Who cares? It's exciting. You have to try it once.
Though, they're lucky. I'm actually a very big fan of The Grinch. The live-action movie is one of my favorite movies of all time because it's so silly.
Early reactions to The Grinch's dill pickle McShaker fries are pretty positive, with people hoping McDonald's keeps the concept around past Christmas and maybe even expands with some of the flavors found in other parts of the world. Oh, so other parts of the world have other flavors?
Yeah. They've been doing it for a long time.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. This is like the news I needed after the AI.
I just wish they weren't pickle flavored. My God.
I used to not like pickle stuff, but then now you're a
fiend.
Yeah, I recently got into eating like those pickle flavored Lay's. Oh, those are good. That's my new jam. I love those things. I got to get some. I need some. I want some. You said it went into McDonald's yesterday?
Yeah, it's live. It's live right now. Like,
you can I wonder what the socks are about.
They're just Christmas-themed socks.
Like, you get socks.
But not everybody has the same size of foot, so I don't know how.
Well, you know, they do usually make, like, those kind of one-size socks, like, where it's very stretchy. So, like, unless you have extremely big feet or extremely small feet, it'll probably fit you.
Well, you know what they say. I got regular-sized feet.
And what does that mean?
Nothing. Just got regular size feet.
I wonder, I want to get some, but I also want the socks as part of the experience. Like, I need to have everything. I mean, sure it's expensive. Well,
yeah, you just got to buy the meal. They don't list the price in the article, but I'm sure that, you know, you'll pay a little bit of money for that.
I want these. I will get these and I will report back.
All right. And then, did I have another fun story? I did. This one's gaming related.
Okay.
But it's also art related. And it's also, Jesus Christ, guys, chill out. Final Fantasy VII's Aerith asks you to stop sending actors your smut.
Are people sending actors their smut? I mean, I guess so, huh?
Well, the article lists a few actors that this happened to. It says, every now and then, I remember when BioShock lead Ken Levine, or Levine, asked fans to stop sending him porn of Elizabeth from BioShock Infinite because it felt like seeing NSFW pictures of a daughter. Smut artists have only gotten bolder in the years since because they're sending this art directly to creators on various social media platforms. While some are down for it, Brianna White, who voices Aerith in Final Fantasy VII Remake, is not. White responded to a video on X of Ray Ami, that's one of the vocalists from K-pop Demon Hunters, talking about how much smut she'd been exposed to the titular demon hunting trio. The voice of Zoe said it can be shocking, but admitted to seeking some of it out herself. So, she might be into that. White responded, saying she doesn't want people to normalize tagging actors in pornographic art of their characters, and that those who do this have forgotten the meaning of the word inappropriate.
Yeah, okay. So, this really, really, really reminds me of kind of the parasocial thing that we've found ourselves talking about so often on this podcast.
As we form a parasocial bond with you, we discuss parasocial relationships.
Yes. It feels as though there is a subset of fans who, I'm trying to debate if I want to like how deep I want to go into describing some of the things that I've like seen people do with this. There are people, you know how like there are some people who can't separate like actors in movies and shows from like their characters.
Right.
And so like they'll be like, you remember like iCarly, for instance? I remember like the actors in iCarly, they would say how fans would see them at like malls or other places and like scream at them as though like they're their characters. Like, who are the characters in iCarly? Like
Carly.
Like Sam and Freddie should have ended up with each other, and like they'll say they see like the Freddie actor, I forget his name, and they'll like Nathan Kress
took a picture with him recently.
And he wait what?
A friend of mine posted a picture with him recently.
That's cool. Yeah, they'll see him in like public and be like, you should have ended up with like Sam instead, or you should have been with Carly instead. Like as though he's Freddie from the show.
But I do wonder how you even respond to that exactly.
Yeah, and how do you respond to it?
It's like, I should have, I think.
It's like, he wasn't one of the writers, so what fucking choice does he have? And like, B, like, he's a guy in public in his like 30s or whatever, like being pointed at and like kind of just harassed by like this fan. So you take this a step further, and I do think that when people see the voice actor or the actor or whatever as like as the character, there's this assumption that they would want to see fan art of the character, which fan art on its own, they probably don't mind seeing, right? She's Aerith's voice actress. You would like to maybe see some cool like picture of Aerith that someone drew. But I always wonder, when does it take the leap into the NSFW territory where you would think that she would want to see that or be tagged in that?
Everybody draws the line of decency at wherever they're at. Some people, the more like perverse images aren't so bad. You know, as long as I don't see full penetration, it's not really porn as far as some people are concerned. But then other people feel very differently. You know, they see, you know, an ankle of like outside of that skirt, and they're like, "Oh, this is a little racy for me." And what people forget is we're all different, and we have different like feelings about those things. What a lot of people do who send that type of artwork to these voice actresses and actors, you're taking the agency away from them to decide what they feel is appropriate, especially right. Between an artist and a fan. You said, like, because she's Aerith's voice actor, you feel like you should send them your favorite artwork of Aerith or that you just drew. And like maybe it's like just it's Aerith in like a bikini, and it's like, this is to be fine, right? It's fine. Well, you gotta remember that this person is actually not Aerith, and even if they were, they might not
want to see themselves to see or the character they represent them
depicted in a sexual way without their consent. Because remember, in real life, you can't just send someone a picture of them like naked or half naked.
Yeah, like some revenge because porn thing.
If there's a picture of like me in a swimsuit, I had to consent to putting on the swimsuit and likely consent to taking the picture. So there's inherent consent with that. But when it comes to art, you are just creating the scenario yourself. Yeah. And then the parasocial part is you believe your level of decency has to be their level of decency because you're fans of them. But that's not how it works.
Ooh, Alex is cutting away at it. You know, there's not much left to say. I was going to say, I mean, there are oftentimes examples where people will let you know if they want that stuff sent. Like, you know, a lot of VTubers will have like their own dedicated subreddit or Discord server where they encourage right. fans to like, you know, you can make NSFW fan art of this avatar. Like I've seen some VTubers who do that. And that's their choice. That's their right to decide. I have
a theory about that.
What are you thinking?
I have a theory. They don't have a choice.
So you're saying it's a way to basically, they know it's going to happen anyway.
It's going to happen anyway. So at least
it's best to try to like, you
might as well encourage it because it does create, it does that give the fans a way to interact. Even if you don't like that sort of thing, let's say you're completely asexual. If you're a VTuber, it's to your benefit, strongly to your benefit, to embrace even the NSFW sides of your fandom.
Yeah, I also know, and this happens in so many ways with like voice actors and stuff. I remember when we were at like, I think a TCG con and some of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Voice actors were there, and we were in line to get like some cards signed, and there was a fan I saw who was like talking to, maybe it was like Darren Dunstan, voice of Pegasus, or maybe it was like Greg Abbey from Yusei, and they were like, you know, these are these four kids voice actors who are in their like 40s, 50s now and stuff, right? They have no idea what's going on with Yu-Gi-Oh! And like there was this fan who clearly was very overeager, but maybe couldn't pick up on kind of the social dynamics of the situation, was like asking Greg Abbey, like, what do you think about how like, you know, Konami's done this, this, and other, and they won't reprint such and such and another, and they haven't made like an alt art of Stardust Dragon, and all the decks now are doing this, that, and the other, you know, they combo for 10 minutes long. Like, what do you think about Yu-Gi-Oh!'s become? You should tell Konami to change this. And they just went on this like long tirade, and you can tell like Darren's trying his best to kind of just nod along and like hurry this person off so they can get to the next person in line, get to the next signature. He does not care about like how modern Yu-Gi-Oh! Works. It just isn't, he has no control over that. He's been long since separated from him. He does not play the game, doesn't care. But for a lot of fans, they aren't able to separate the character from the fact that this is just like an actor kind of portraying them, and that they assume that like the character, this actor plays Yu-Gi-Oh and like follows all of this stuff, and that they're as deep into this bubble as you are, and they want to hear all your thoughts on it. I think it's like a similar thing to this thing that like Breonna White's describing, where it's like, you know, she voices Aerith. She probably likes Aerith. She has to obviously get in the character and stuff. She doesn't want to see like all of your deep fan theories about Aerith, or your
does not mean she wants to see her
or your
Cloud by like Cloud on one side and Zach on the other with Barrett cheering them on. Like, that doesn't mean she wants to see all that. You know, she doesn't want to see a fictional, perfectly realistic depiction of the date scene, but it's her and Tifa in the on the Ferris wheel instead of like her and Cloud. Like, she doesn't want to see all that, so y'all need to stop, man. Like,
yeah, send it to Alec instead. Is what he's basically saying. No, but I mean, like, it's true though. I feel bad for these people because like the internet has really allowed fandoms to fester in a way that is, I would say, maybe a little bit too much. Like, I think that the internet in some ways can. So whenever there's like kind of an isolated Discord server or Reddit place or whatever, where like a VTuber says, okay, just make NSFW my avatar and it'll be amusing and fun and we can all share it. I agree with you that I think that they're probably grudgingly doing that, but whatever. The point is though, like, it's become so accessible to see explicit content of characters and share it. And like the algorithm kind of does this thing to you that you think you can do to everybody else, which is, you don't actually get a say in what you see when you open Twitter or like Instagram or whatever, mm-hmm. or TikTok. The algorithms learned you, and now like you're just exposed to the picture. It's there whether you asked for it or not. And you swipe, and then the next thing is there, and it's something else that's inappropriate. And if you're a fan of these characters, you might enjoy this. Like, yes, like more Aerith fan art, more Aerith fan art, more like, you know, this is just, I love Aerith and Tifa and all these things. And so I see this fan art, but like what you're really getting trained on is this idea that like, how you feel about this stuff and your joy of seeing these pictures and the fact that they're shown to you without any consent or really choice in the matter is how everyone should see them and how everyone should be exposed to these things.
But see,
and
that's not how real life works, right? In real life, you can't, like, if I don't want to see porn, I just don't.
Yeah.
It's only on the internet where you can have things just forced in front of your eyes.
Yeah, and without your say in the matter. And I think, like, some people, they've seen that
which
enough.
That's why
that,
I spend so much time there.
Right. That's right. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I understand exactly what she's saying. I hate that it has to happen because there's rarely any way to really combat it. Like,
for me, I just want like voice actors and artists to be able to enjoy their role in these IPs and franchises. I don't want them to have a bad time, and the fact that like overzealous fans can harm her experience playing Aerith. I'm like, well, I never want the voice actor for a video game series that I really enjoy to ever say there was a part of that experience that they did not enjoy.
The fandom, yeah. I mean, and there have been other examples. I know like Marvel actors have, like, that's kind of been a thing, like where like people assume that they are their character,
yeah,
in public. Or there's like one other example I was going to give that happened that I remember seeing, like the Final Fantasy 14 voice actress for Wuklamot.
Oh god,
I remember
she
like
got torn to
shreds. Yeah, they really,
that poor woman.
Yeah, like, oh, your voice acting sucked and like you needed to die. So it's, people can just, they can get either angry or, and that's the worst part. That's the last thing I'll say, is the fan who sent Breonna White this like Aerith porn probably thought they were doing her a favor. Like, they probably thought that they were like,
doesn't this look great?
Isn't this cool? Like, don't you want to see this? Like, so it's one thing when people hate you, because like that's worse, but like at least with hate, you can almost like compartmentalize it as just, okay, these are just like these angry haters, whatever. Mm. I can kind of like set it to the side. But when it's like a fan who, they do like Aerith and they do like your portrayal of her and all these great things, but they just are so overzealous that they think that you would enjoy seeing explicit content of this character. And that just couldn't be further from the truth. So.
Nerds.
Yeah. Nerds can get, it can be a lot. Anyone, really. All right, well, it's time to reach into the pot of greed to decompress.
How dare you put your hand in there knowing you did not put any cards in there?
It's been so long since I put cards in there. Maybe that'll be my New Year's resolution. Like, start putting some cards back in the pot of greed.
Yeah, let us know in the comments if Paul needs to put cards in the pot of greed. And guys, I'd help, but my hand doesn't actually like fit
anymore. We'll have Alec write them all.
Like, I can't. This is my writing hand.
You said that you're left-handed, actually, right?
Yeah, but I can't write with my left.
That's weird. Okay, well, anyway. we have some viewer questions that you guys have submitted. We love it when you submit viewer questions. They give us things to talk about, and sometimes they're really juicy. These two, I think, are both Yu-Gi-Oh! Related as well this week.
Okay.
So, all right. Here's the first one. Since gameplay from the DM/GX era is what most older and returning players associate with Yu-Gi-Oh!, should that gameplay exist in an officially supported format outside of Time Wizard? And if so, what's the best vehicle for it? Speed Duel, Battle Pack, or something else?
I do think it should exist and it should be officially supported by Konami. The problem is it's not necessarily in Konami's best interest because historically supporting the older style of Yu-Gi-Oh! Isn't very lucrative.
It's, oh my God. Oh, I regret. We should just end this podcast with no viewer questions because I have so many thoughts on this and I'm just sitting here like, okay.
Paul, you chose a question for a reason.
I know. How do I express what I think about all of this? Because, like, you know, the two of us, we have thoughts. We talk about this so much, if you guys only know.
We just finished recording the end of Retro Rivals 2.
Yeah, there's so much to say here. Yu-Gi-Oh!, I think, that whole, like, DM and GX is kind of the era that everybody wants to kind of reach back to. It's nostalgic. You yearn for it. And I agree. Yeah, there should be a way to basically play that for people who want to. I think Speed Duel actually did a pretty good job of it.
Y'all saw what we did to that.
It's a shame that Speed Duel did not take off
more. We laughed them out the room.
Yeah, it kind of got laughed out the room. Players just decided this kind of isn't for them. It didn't sell well, so Konami axed it. And I think that the sales metrics needed for like anything to survive at any company really are high. So, if I had to give my best bet of how it should be represented, Speed Duel was the number one, but it's gone. Battle Pack's gone. What they do now is they just released support for anime archetypes. They'll release like new Blue Eyes cards and they'll be modern in nature and they'll kind of attempt to sort of bring it up to like the power level of what's expected to be played today. Sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't. But I think that is duplicitous. Because when you do that, like, the player who wants to play that deck is still kind of thrust into modern Yu-Gi-Oh! And all of its many eccentricities and challenges. And it's like, but I don't know what's the next best thing?
There isn't. Play, like, fan-created formats. Yep. And that kind of just has to be the way. Konami should find a way to support like legacy style Yu-Gi-Oh! In some official capacity, but it's not very lucrative, and so it's fall. They get, at least they print cards. If nothing else, they still print cards. They are reprinting retro cards, and they are giving us legacy support for older archetypes. I think we're at the point now where it just falls on us to make our own fun with Yu-Gi-Oh!
You know, last week we answered a question, and somebody, I saw a comment on this on Facebook too, where somebody was sort of talking about how, like, yeah, if you remember the question was, like, how do I play Yu-Gi-Oh! With my spouse?
Yep.
And we said that basically, like, one of the best things that we can say is you almost kind of turn it into an isolated experience.
Just your own game.
One or two kind of pre-built decks or maybe a cube, and it's just something that you and your spouse do, and you kind of ignore the meta, the kind of flow of products and all that stuff and ban lists, and it's just like, we just play this matchup over and over, but it's kind of deep, or we can change out some cards in our decks, whatever. I think that, like, old school Yu-Gi-Oh! Has to be exactly like what you're describing. You pick a friend or a small group of friends or whatever, you set very tight rules for it, and you don't really expect that there's going to be support from Konami's end. And the reason I say that is because support from Konami's end suggests that there might also then be, like, new cards, and now you're subject to power creep, or there might be tournaments. And here's where, like, the lie comes in that every casual player tells themselves about Yu-Gi-Oh! You probably know exactly what I'm going to say.
What's the lie?
The lie is that we're just playing for fun. And you're not. You think you are. you think you're playing for fun and like you want to kind of just play like DM and GX and kind of get into character and have these back and forth duels. But the moment that there is even just the set dressing of a tournament being played, it means that there's really no reason for you to tribute summon Dark Magician.
What a shame.
You're playing your Yugi deck, but there's really no reason to tribute summon Dark Magician. And so now you're kind of in this strange environment where like you kind of notice that Dark Magician, it's actually a brick in your hand. You don't want it in your hand because you want to win. You want to like be able to do your deck's thing. And you can see this in play so often when like casual people are, you know, you'll have these Yugi boomers who are like, the game is ruined. I want it to be like back like how it was in Battle City. But they'll still be angry that they lost to someone's meta deck.
Until you can lose and feel nothing.
Yeah.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Can never be actually casual and for fun.
Yeah.
The a lot of you guys have watched a lot of our retro games, and Paul and I look like we're having a lot of fun. The truth is, we're having a stupid amount of fun. We're having more fun than you even think we are. And the whole reason why we can is because the winner and loser doesn't actually matter. There's no money on the line. There's no invites to Nats. There's no prize cards. Not even an OTS
and,
pack.
And it's and what people will say when you say that, people's argument will be, well, like, you know, if it's just for locals, even at locals, someone does have to win and someone does have to lose. And that's, you know, where, like, it all kind of begins to break apart. It's like, if you're relying on Konami to support this, then you are also accepting that there will be people who do want to win that will play it, and that will kind of, that's going to kind of like just get inseminated into the experience in some form or fashion. And like, old cards do suck. Like Blue Eyes White Dragon, Dark Magician, they are cool iconic cards, but like
they're not good.
They're not good cards. They're not actually cards that you want to run. And even if you want to kind of imagine yourself as like playing with old school stuff, well, if you know your opponent's got a trap hole in the field, would you tribute two monsters to summon a Dark Magician? And it gets trap holed, and you're like, well, now suddenly this whole immersive thing breaks. But here's the problem. And I know I'm kind of deviating from the question here. It's turned into my own little personal rant. But like, trap hole is a classic card, though. It comes in Star Deck, Yugi, and Kaiba. But like, they use trap hole on your Dark Magician, and that's something that doesn't actually ever happen in the show. Whenever Yugi summons Dark Magician in the show, it doesn't get trap holed. He gets to summon it and attack, and things happen, and he equips a bit. Like it's kind of this meeting of the reality of what it means to play a game and like the suspension of disbelief and the veneer that comes with the narrative of like an anime duel.
So that makes me think about the fact that, and this has always been true in Yu-Gi-Oh! We just don't look at it the same way anymore because time has passed. There's how you want to enjoy Yu-Gi-Oh! And then there's how you have to enjoy Yu-Gi-Oh!
Ooh, that's well
when
said.
If we go back in time to when you and I first shot Rare Hunters, you know, many people expected it would be this big anime fest. We're going to use all these anime fan favorite cards, and we're going to have these big climactic battles with dragons and wizards. But it mostly came down to Maneater Bug.
Yeah,
like, Maneater Bug was that guy.
It comes down to like kind of tight resource management and like getting the best value out of small monsters. And really, over time, you kind of realize taking risks on big tribute summons not kind of scary, worth it. Right? Like maintaining
it was a throw that you had to purposefully try to make. Like, I'm gonna summon his Blue Eyes. I know it's bad, but boy, it would look cool if it works.
Yeah. I actually, so it's funny, I made a video about this that it'll be up on the channel when you guys are listening to this podcast about make it your second listen. And listen to this, listen to that. It'll be great. But it was sort of about the way that you have to sort of suspend your disbelief. I was doing a duel with Ruxin. It's Wheeled Anime. I did it recently. You spin the wheel, you get an anime character. He got like Raphael from the Doma arc of Yu-Gi-Oh! You might not be as familiar with that.
I don't.
The Seal of Orichalcos thing. Is that
he was the main guy?
He's one of the, not the main guy. He was like one of their.
Was henchmen. He like the darker skinned guy with the blonde hair?
Yeah, he uses Guardian Yautos.
I don't know what that means, but okay.
Well, either way, and I had like Espa Roba. And so we're dueling and we have to use cards that they used in the anime, so our decks suck and everything. And then we can fill them in with goat staples as the rest of the cards. Already there's a bit of a problem.
Goat has some good staples.
Because Goat has pretty good staples. Like Dark Hole and Heavy Storm suddenly aren't anime fun cards anymore. Well, anyway, like in that duel, I set a trap Dust Shoot. And I put it in my deck because it's a goat staple, which followed the rules. And it's also a card I imagine, well, Espa Roba would probably use something like this. Like, look into the opponent's hand and see what they have because he's faking psychic power. So I thought that was sort of in character. I just had one copy of that to fill in a spot. I set that card and I didn't use it for most of the duel because I could tell that, like, Ruxin had bricked. And I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to, like... And it's a skill. You and I know it very well of, like, you have to, like, okay, your opponent's bricking. You have to hold back a little bit. And, like, take your foot off the gas and just sort of, like...
Give him a chance to play.
I won't keep summoning things. I won't just attack for game or whatever. Well, someone in the comments was really upset about this. They were like, Paul's, like, crazy. Why did he not, like... I was tearing my hair out of it. He wouldn't use Trap Dust Shoot. And, like, he should have used it or whatever. And it's just like, I could have used it. And then the duel ends and the video's over. You happy? Because, like, what did you click for, really, right? Like, it's like you have to... When you click that video... There's kind of this expectation of this back and forth entertaining narrative duel, but Yu-Gi-Oh! Doesn't actually do that very often. Oftentimes, it's like I said, you tribute summon the Dark Magician or the Blue Eyes, it gets trap hold.
Yep.
Or it gets this hit with a Man-Eater bug and kind of anticlimactically is defeated. Or like a Trap Dust Shoot kind of rips something out of your hand, or Delinquent Duo or something like these old cards. You remember that from Rare Hunters. So that's the thing, is like, you know. You have to kind of choose, well, okay, if your opponent's bricking, you're not going to do this, and accept that in doing so, you might lose the duel later. We've done so many like retro duels where I'm like, well, I don't want to win this fast, so I'm going to hold back and let my opponent do more. And in doing that, they beat me, and so now you have to decide, well, are you okay with losing? In my case, I am, because it's content at the end of the day. But for, I think, a lot of viewers, that's not as... readily apparent.
The analogy that came to my head during this discussion is professional wrestling.
Oh, yeah, okay.
A good duel from the anime, or even a good theme duel out of Team APS, is a match in the WWE. It's all flash, it's drama, it's scripted. Like, now, we can't script every single play of a game. We did try that once. It went over okay. But we don't like to go through that much trouble when it comes to creating a good duel. But for the most part, you want a big, exciting duel as if you're watching the anime. That's WWE, baby. It's pretty much all drama. It's all planned. The big moves. A real wrestler would never do half the things that they do in a WWE because... That's not how you win an actual wrestling match.
Yeah.
And the same is true for Yu-Gi-Oh! We would not summon half the monsters they do in the anime. We would not use half the cards they use in the anime. Because that's not how you win at Yu-Gi-Oh! If you want to enjoy real Yu-Gi-Oh! You have to meet it where it's at. And that Paul and I found a lot of joy in milking little interactions for every bit of card advantage that we could get. And... We would only ever make a big play if we already had the backup play in our hand. Like, if I summoned a Blue-Eyes White Dragon and Paul hit it with a bottomless trap hole, I knew it was there. I'm doing that so my next play doesn't get bottomless.
It effectively comes down to being a showman as opposed to being a competitor. All right, the next question is, and this one's a bit of a quicker one, I assume. In an attempt to help sell sealed product in OTS stores and in general, do you think it's a good idea to have reprints of old cards in main core booster sets to support upcoming archetypes and or support for existing strategies? Virtually 80% of the total card pool is never used, and more commons and upcoming sets rack up to the total number of the unused amount. I'd be curious to hear your opinion on this. Thanks again for the great podcast, Draco, who I think actually submitted a really good question for like last week's podcast. Anyway, I feel like that. I recognize that name.
Shout out to Draco.
But yeah, so what do we think about the idea of, I guess, mainline sets, it sounds like, including reprints of things?
It all depends on what the cards being reprinted are and how many of them they are. Because if the goal is to cut down on the just kind of useless bloat that shows up in all of our like case and box openings, then it will do absolutely nothing if the cards reprinted are considered just more bloat.
So I've got thoughts.
What you got?
This gets back to my thing with why I do not like sets like Battles of Legend and sometimes the Maze sets as well. So Battles of Legend last year had the support for Jirox, Fabled, Necroz, right? Or Ice Barrier, one of them. I think it was like Necroz. And Gem Knights. And so it was really cool support. They've been doing that support for these like Terminal World archetypes for a couple years now. I think there's like another set that's going to be coming out this time. And I have said for a long time that those would be better done as structure decks for two reasons. A, so you don't have to pull a bunch of like, you know, sit here and try to open these packs trying to pull like secrets and ultras out of a set that's not worth anything. And like you'll pull two of the new Gem Knight cards in a box. And now you'll have to like buy a gajillion boxes if you want to get it. Or you can buy singles. We hold on to this conversation. It would be easier if these were just structure decks because it could skip that whole step.
Right.
And it'd look more attractive on the shelf. The second reason it'd be better to be structured decks, though, is because they could easily reprint all of the old Gem Knight cards that you need if you want to build Gem Knights, or all the old Fabled cards that you need if you want to play Fabled. So, or Jirox, or whatever. The Jirox deck, actually, as it happens, is somewhat slightly competitive. It's like a lower rogue strat. Same with Gem Knights. So, like, these, it's not to say that these are decks that suck, but what happens is they will oftentimes have some old card that you still need for them. Like Ritual Beast the year before last, you still needed to get like Ritual Beast Tamer Elder, which wasn't reprinted in the Battles of Legend set and hadn't been reprinted. Seemingly purposefully so, which they eventually got to around to reprinting in an OTS pack. So I get it, you're supposed to follow the breadcrumbs and it's like, oh, I want to build this, so I got to go to my locals and play so I can get the, yes, cool, fun. The thing is though, it would be easier if you could just have a product that had the new cards for these archetypes and was able to like bespokely reprint the stuff that they know that you will need in order to play them, because nothing,
they know what you need,
because they know exactly what you need, and nothing's worse than like you open Doom of Dimensions, it's got DDD cards, great, but you still need like a bunch of other existing DDD cards that you have to go through a lot of hoops to get. I like what this person is suggesting if done right, like you said, because it's like so much of the lack of appeal in some sets comes down to the fact that you need older cards and it's too much trouble to get them.
It actually reminds me a bit of the list with Magic the Gathering.
Mm-hmm.
With every new booster set in Magic, there's a certain number of cards that are essentially alt art reprints of older cards. One, it puts them back in rotation, but two, it's just a reprint for a card that may not have been printed in a while.
Yeah.
And it's just a consistent thing you can expect out of them. And I do think that helps when it comes to getting your hands on older cards. Yu-Gi-Oh! Could use something like that. I don't know how expansive it should be. Maybe it should be really conservative. Maybe every set should only have like 10 reprinted cards, but they're literally like the 10 best reprints for the strategies in the set.
I remember in the OCG, they do like the box toppers that will have a reprinted card. Like I remember we opened a Duelist Advanced one, and our box topper was like some old Monarch card because like it has like new Monarch support, but you only would get like one in the box topper. So I don't know how much use that's really going to be for you to build the whole set. But like
better
I do
nothing.
But I like. At my locals, when I went back home, there was a Black Friday deal at one of the local card shops, and they were selling Dude and Duad boxes for $25 a piece for Black Friday.
$25 a piece?
Which is it was a pretty good deal. And even then, though, I didn't get you one.
Wow.
It was only for kids. No, not kidding. But it's even at that price, like people were kind of hesitant to buy it, which really shows you where Yu-Gi-Oh! Sealed product is at the moment. But like, people are just ripping open lots of Dude packs throughout the day. People would come in the shop, grab one. Cool. I bought one myself. But people would pull that, like, True Draco support cards. Like, there's, like, two new True Draco cards. And one's, like, an Ultra or whatever. And
toss it on the pyre.
They just toss it on the table. It's like, well, it's cool that True Draco is getting support. But
who has a True Draco deck?
Like, you know, that means you have to go and get the True Draco cards. And that's, like, it's tedious for a lot of people. So you just kind of don't bother building it. Now, yes, Drew Deco were recently reprinted in some set like last year, I think, or they were in like Battles of Legend this year, something like that. But it would, I can see some merits in like reprinting the cards that you need for it.
In the set that makes it necessary for you to have the old cards. I get it. I'm not against it. I just hope it like if we implemented something like this, it wouldn't just add to the bloat problem.
Yeah, because it still does mean that there's just so many people who like I'm not building True Draco, I'm not building DDD, so like, the stuff still ends up in the pile. But I do think that compared to the way that it is now, it sounds like it'd be an improvement regardless.
I can see it. I can see it working out.
Yeah, see where you're coming from. Thank you for the question, and that's going to be the end of the podcast. One last reminder, though, because their Black Friday deal, I think, is still going on. The podcast is supported in part to Ewin Racing. They provide us with these awesome gaming chairs that we've been using. They've got these nice headrests, lumbar support. You can lean them back. You can spin them around. All sorts of great features. If you want to get them in these colors or others, you can go over to Ewin Racing at the link in the description down below. Use the code APS30. If you buy even one of them, it will support us greatly and let them know that this was worth their while. That's going to be it.
We'll see you guys in the next one.
Pass turn.